I'm personally against hiring people that you have to give them a list of things to do. Is my way of doing management is that we hire people, and my role as a manager is to empower them and support them to lead projects by themselves and innovate by themselves. Statistics say that 50% of women get out of tech in their first years after starting. And there are two main reasons. One is that, no support for childcare when they decide to become a mom. But I think the most important one is the culture in the tech companies. And this is something that you can change, I think, by mentoring the managers. I think managers have such a big impact in companies and in the culture of the companies. I know that other companies think that Postgres is good for everything, for observability, for key value store, for this and that. And we have the opposite vision that we know. I think Postgres should be at the center of your database platform, and then you can use different data stores for different use cases that you have.
Welcome to the second season of Optimize All the Things podcast. I'm your host, Bartek Płotka.
And I'm your host, Ivan Volkov. Optimize All the Things is a podcast in which we talk about technology, software engineering, careers, soft skills, and really all the things we can optimize in our work and life. And this season, we focus on tech startups.
In today's session, we talk to Monica Sarbu, a CEO and a founder of Zeta Company, but also an incredibly smart leader and engineer. We talk about the importance of working at a startup in your engineering career, mentoring as an incredible tool for diversity, and how to get customers. But finally, the importance of hiring engineers with a high agency skill set. I'm sure you will love it.
Let's jump straight into it. Hello, Monica. Thank you for joining us today in this podcast episode. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm really fine. The weather is nice, so it makes me happy.
Nice, nice, nice. Awesome. Can you give our listeners a quick introduction about yourself and kind of your story?
Yes, definitely. First of all, thanks for having me here. It's really my pleasure. And yeah, a bit about myself. And I'm the CEO and founder of a company called Zeta. And it's like data, but with X. The idea was extended data. And before that, I was in the observability space for many years, building monitoring solution right after college. And the first startup that I had was building an open source monitoring solution. It was called PacketBit, that was acquired by Elastic. And after Elastic, I decided to start this monitoring, mentorship platform for underrepresented groups in tech. It was called Tupo.io. And this is how I got the idea of Zeta. And we realized there isn't any database solution out there that can offer you all the functionality that your application needs. So in order for you to spend all your resources not on building a database platform, but building the application itself. And this is how I started Zeta, with the idea to build the next generation of databases that is fully managed and provides you as many functionality as possible. So basically, it offers you the database platform that companies out there need to build from scratch.
Awesome. I think we'll definitely want to dive deeper into Zeta, into Tupo. But let's start from the beginning. How did you get into software engineering and like programming and, tech in general?
I think by mistake. So I'm originally from Romania, and there I had the opportunity that when you start high school in the ninth grade, you can basically choose your major. And I chose randomly, to be honest with you, computer science. So basically, in my high school, we had intensive classes of programming. And even both my parents knew how to write code, they didn't really teach me until I had to basically go to, to school. And, we had like more than 10 hours of programming per week. So this is how I started. We had been learning algorithms and things like this for the 4 years. And then I decided to continue this journey and go to Computer Science University. And even though my mom was against that, but because it's a hard university, I wanted to really do the most challenging thing and go to computer science.
Nice. And at some point after university, you moved to Germany, right?
So the way it happened in Romania back then, I think nowadays is not. But I think at the end of university, you could choose to do your diploma thesis somewhere else. And I think this was really a nice experience for a student. And there were a few options. And I decided, me and now my husband, and we decided to go together. And we decided to go to Berlin because the project was interesting.
Awesome. So what happened then? You just started a normal career in tech. You were working as a software engineer. I can see software architect at some point. And at some point, you kind of decided to start a company, right? Tell us about this journey.
Yes. I think what's interesting that at least in our university in Romania, the teachers were always telling you, your dream should be to work for a big company. Mm-hmm. And at back then, there was Google that was coming to our university, trying to recruit people, especially that back then it was important for you to be very good with algorithms. I was not so good with algorithms, but back then, why would you go to Google? It's just the 200 people company. And then basically, I think I had the opportunity in my career to first I worked for a larger company, and then I moved to a smaller company, a startup. Actually, I was working for two companies at the time because I was not sure which one I should choose. But I think definitely it was a very important early in my career to work for a startup. And why is that? Is that because it kind of forces you to do different things and you can grow in your career much faster than working in a larger organization. And it was the first time when I realized that, I was doing C code, so I was a C developer, and I realized that what I'm doing is really meaningful when my boss back then, we went to Lidl or some supermarket and they were selling basically. So I was working for building software for the bigger telecoms in Germany. And when he was telling me, look, they are selling basically the product in the supermarket that you build a piece of it. And, this is a moment when I realized, what I'm doing here, it impacts people, right? And this is the first moment when I realized that the power of engineering. And for me, building code or writing code was basically, I really like creating things and I really liked innovation. And I think this was an opportunity, I would say, for me to be able to do this.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for sharing all of this. So sounds like you wanted to innovate and build. And, I guess that was the point when maybe your first kind of company appeared. How that happened?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So so the startup that I worked, so I was not one of the founders, but now is called the founding team. And this company we are building monitoring solution for the telecoms. And it got successful and we were acquired by a US company and this was acquired by Oracle. And this was a moment when I decided that I want to start over and build my own startup. Of course, when you decide to start something new, you kind of need to have an idea. And my idea was I have been working for monitoring solution in my last, I think, maybe 10 years or so back then. And I was thinking this, I can apply all the knowledge that I have in building a new product. And this is how PacketBit was born. And basically we were building a monitoring solution, open source, that was generic. So not or dedicated only for telecom companies. And this is how everything started. And yeah, and I mean, if you want, I can share a bit more about, you know, the journey. But the short story is that after 2 years, this was PacketBit was acquired by Elastic.
Can I ask more about technical details? Like, what do you think was special about this open source project that it got really awareness of a big company like Elastic? I'm just curious. What are you the most proud of?
So we had a different approach. So back then, the monitoring space was very crowded. And if you think now, when you start a company, you don't really dare to start a company in a space that is very crowded. Back then, I said, no, we're going to do things differently. Most of the other companies that don't exist nowadays, they were looking to collect metrics and logs. And my story was different. So because of the experience that I have before building a monitoring solution for the telecom, I was looking in the network packets. So basically, we're collecting information from the network packets. And you know, this, in my opinion back then, was that this is just an angle that you should offer to your users for monitoring. And we started with this just because I think none of the other companies were looking into the network packets, and with the idea that later when we grow the company, then we can also extend and collect metrics and logs and so on. When I started, this wasn't open source. So it wasn't open source from the beginning. And then, you know, I had the first prototype. And I was not very good UI developer. So this was my biggest fear because, you know, I was a backend engineer and I was really struggling, and I'm still struggling. I think building anything related to UI, I find it somehow complicated. And the first MVP I was trying, basically after I had the first MVP, I was trying to find customers, but all the other people that I was contacting, they were using already one of the, you know, other companies that were a mature company. So, and then I decided to open source the agent. So basically I had an agent and you're installing it in your server and collecting all this information from the network traffic, decoding the packets, you know, and so on. And was pushing the data to Elasticsearch. And then I used Kibana to visualize the data. And this was for me an easy win because, you know, I didn't have to build a UI from scratch, so I could use Kibana, and you could build extensions or plugins, I'm not sure how or call it back then, on top of Kibana, I could have specific plugin to visualize the specific data that I was collecting. And with this, basically, you could have an end-to-end monitoring solution. And, you know, I open source the project, the agent, basically. And back then, there were not many open source projects. So it got a bit of popularity. The community grew. People started to contribute. And then I started to be contacted by different companies to discuss, and in the same time we are also looking for investment. And I was in Berlin back then, and the problem back then it was there were not really VCs that really understand B2B market or even open source. No one believed in open source back then. So we could quickly realize that, you know, it's hard to, you know, get a VC that really understands what you are building. So I think we had basically two options, either to bootstrap the company. Anyway, so I put my own money in the company. So either you bootstrap the company, but it's really a slow progress. Or you basically sell the company. So this is how I decided to sell. I think it was not a complex decision. Right? So we had this meeting with two of the founders of Elastic, and immediately we realized that we have common interests, common views, and we decided to join forces with them. So we didn't even imagine that we're going to sell the company, but after meeting the founders, we were very convinced that we want to join forces with them. And Elastic back then was rather 150 people company, so it was a small company.
Yeah, thank you. Wow, so many good learnings here.
And then you spent 3 years leading the Beats team in Elastic, right? So basically, the company that you created, PacketBeat, became like one of the foundations of, you know, what kind of Elastic is known
observability
for. Yeah,
yes, exactly. So basically, this became the one of the, we decided to call it Beats because we had PacketBeat, and with the idea to build more of these agents, and each agent is basically collecting different types of information. So we had MetricBeat, we have log, we have FileBeat. We have many. I think we have 7 or 8 beats. I didn't think about
not this. Not a fluent beat. That's a different thing, right?
Sorry?
Not a fluent beat, right? That's a different.
No, exactly. That's a different company, actually. No, we have FileBeat. And anyway, so basically this kind of was the base for what Elastic is offering to the observability. It's true that along the way, we also acquire companies in order to help us move faster forward. And for us, the most difficult one was security. So we decided to build security or to start a security solution in our own team. Actually, I had multiple teams, but I'm calling it the team. And we quickly realized that it's, you know, with security, you need to kind of... you need to acquire the experience and knowledge. And the way we did it is that we hired 10 people from companies, from the security companies. And then we were really lucky that we joined forces with this amazing company in the security space. And this kind of moved us much forward faster in building a more complete observability solution.
What was difficult in the security? Why was difficult to kind of like, I guess, monitor security? What was the most kind of like, what's the reason?
It's experience, right? Even if you are a leader, you need to have experience. So my partner, the leader, the tech lead of the Beat, he kind of moved and concentrating his time on learning about security. It requires knowledge and deep knowledge
Makes
understanding.
Sense. Makes sense. Yeah, thank you.
So to continue story forward, at some point, Elastic went through an IPO. So basically, you saw like a lot of the life cycles of a startup. Like you started a company, your company got acquired, you were working within Elastic to kind of grow, and at some point you went through IPO. Like what was this journey about? Like how did the IPO happen? Like what was your involvement there? It will be interesting to hear.
So I think from my point of view, I see two stages of the company, before IPO and after IPO. So before IPO, everyone had like the goal of IPO. Basically, we all worked hard towards that. And we grew quite a lot in the as a company. And, you know, this is something that we had, you know, a lot of learnings from that, bad and good. And you know, something that some mistakes that I would like not to do them again. We say it with the next companies that I will be involved with. It's hard to. I think we were lucky because we had really amazing people around me. So my mentality was always like a leader was to hire the best people in the world, because I've seen that this really makes a difference, especially when we are building dev tools that something that is complicated to build, I think you really need to be to have the smartest people in the room. And you know, I'm personally against hiring people that you have to give them a list of things to do. Is I always my way of doing management is that we hire people, and my role as a manager is to empower them and support them to lead projects by themselves and innovate by themselves. And yeah, so this is, I think we are really lucky with the team that we had at Elastic. It was really amazing and on all the teams. So at Elastic, basically, Elastic as a company had a few acquisitions, and the way it felt like we are a few startups under the same roof. So each of these startups had like its own management and independence, but we, with the advantage that, for example, we in the observability team, if we need something from Elasticsearch as a feature, they can prioritize it for us. So I think this was really a great way of building and you know, building companies and kind of giving you independence that you need as a startup to. So I think this is a good idea, especially if you grow a lot as a company. Imagine that you are 3,000 people inside at a company, but it doesn't feel like you are a big company because you are split in multiple teams. And I think this is an important aspect.
Yeah, makes sense. You mentioned some mistakes. I wonder if you could share with us, like, at least maybe one mistake like that you learn and you'd like others to not make those mistakes, for example, or, you know, just a learning for future. Anything specific?
I think in my opinion, so at the beginning of Elastic, it was a flat structure. So we, you know, like most of the developers are there, they don't want to have a hierarchy. Developers usually are happy with a flat structure, but I think is detrimental, especially when you grow so much. You also have to find time to grow managers internally, because when you grow so fast and you didn't have the chance to grow the managers internally, you will have to hire externally. This can work, but this can also not work and be detrimental for the company. So I think this is, you know, at some point in Elastic, we said now we are introducing layers basically and hierarchy. It was challenging, right? To have this, you know, suddenly introducing hierarchy. So that's why, you know, there are two things, hierarchy, so managers, and also leveling for individuals. We had leveling for individuals from the beginning, but we didn't have managers. And now, for example, Iseta, we already have, so besides me, we already have a manager, and we also have leveling for the individuals. I think it's important to have this early stage. So you don't have, imagine that, you know, suddenly you are introducing leveling and then you have to have the discussion, is this person a senior or is this person a staff? And then it causes a lot of friction between engineers, right? So why did I get only staff and my colleague got senior? But if you have this leveling done from the beginning when they join the company, I think it's not a problem. And then the problem is, the difficulty is that when you are a bigger company and it's hard to follow the same steps, every team that follows the same steps in order to give leveling. You know, some managers might be more strict, some managers might be more relaxed, mm-hmm. and then you end up with. So I think it's hard leveling. So that's why here, for example, Iseta, the way I have it is that I have objective ways, an objective way, how I can define the leveling of a person. And because, you know, for me, it's important not to discriminate, you know, female and male. And leveling is also what drives the salary, for example. So leveling is important. So I'm trying to take objective decisions as much as possible, also in you know, promoting and also in deciding the leveling of each engineer.
What do you think the biggest advantage for the company to have like this kind of, you know, well-defined leveling structure? Is it people are more motivated by, you know, I have a clear goal of what I need to achieve, so I will be working towards that goal, or like, is it something else?
I think it's important to have a manager that guides you and support you. If if you have a manager for 200 people, then that manager cannot really handle.
Yeah.
And you know, nowadays it's common that, like, I don't know, there are like some statistics out there that you need to have as a manager no more than 15 people or 12 people. This is how I think we ended up at Elastic deciding on. Yeah, I think it's important to have someone that supports you as an engineer.
Makes sense. Is this the primary role of the managers at Zeta, to support engineers, to enable them, to help them grow?
Not really. So the way we do it here, and also we did it at Elastic, is that each team is led by two people, a team lead and a tech lead. The team, this is how we call them, Elastic. So what a team lead does is basically is a people manager that basically does the one-on-ones and also helps with, you know, planning of the product, project, and so on. And also you have the tech lead that basically decides, the has the last decision point for all of the technical discussions. And I think, in my opinion, it's important to have these two roles separated, because many engineers, they want to evolve and in their career, but I think the normal way how it's done in tech is that they are directed to become a people manager. And this is not a promotion, in my opinion. This is basically a different role. So that's why I think it's important to have a path where you can really, for engineers to be promoted on the technical path.
Yeah, promoting engineer to a manager is like a penalty almost, right?
Yeah, I think most of the engineers wouldn't really enjoy being a manager, right? So, you know, I hear this often that, you know, I feel more productive if I write code and everything. And being a manager is just, you don't really apply any skills that you have acquired being an engineer. And it's just, you start over. And I think people don't realize this. So that's why I think it's important to have these two, roles separated. And this is how we also do it in Zeta.
Amazing. Okay, so I think we have a few companies more actually, right, to learn about in your story. So you were a leader, a director, sounds like it, an Elastic, and at some point something changed, right?
Yeah, so after Elastic, I decided to, you know, the pandemic started, and I decided that I want to do something good for the society, and especially that, you know, I'm a woman in tech. I feel a bit pressured that I should do something to empower other females leaders out there. And basically, I decided to start Tupu.io when the pandemic started, with the idea to support other females in tech. And this kind of came because before that I was going for a few years to conferences, and I had this talk where basically I was telling a story how it is like try to put yourself in the shoes of a woman in tech. And I was giving this talk to a 90% male dominant audience, because, you know, I was going to like conference like Monitorama or like very, you know, tech-based conference. And actually, I realized that, you know, in my opinion, I had a lot of success with this, because there were male managers coming to me and like, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, that this is how you feel, and tell me how can I can be better as a manager. And especially those that had kids, girls themselves, like they were like, how can I, you know, it's like, how can I, what can I do that my girls are not feeling, will not feel the same when they will be in tech eventually, right? And then, you know, I thought that when I started Chupo, I thought the best way how you can support someone is by mentorship. And why is like this? So there are a few books out there about women in tech, but I feel like they kind of give you a general advice, but actually what people need is like a very precise advice for their own problem, right? And I heard so many bad stories by going to these conferences for females, from females, that I feel like I was the luckiest person in the world that, you know, I was, you know, I was not treated differently in my, most of the time in my career, that I was different from the rest. But most of the others that I spoke with, they are not in the same situation. So, and I think like a small advice from someone else, I think it can be huge for someone like this. So when you see that someone goes into depression, when you see that someone is like, is so low in their mental,
being stuck, right?
Especially, I think so I wanted to do something, and you know, I started Chupo, a non-profit organization, and I was really surprised how many mentors sign up. So the problem I had at the beginning that I had too many mentors, and basically mentors from my network, and I was really surprised, you know, people that were high up in leadership in different companies, and they found some time to mentor people that had problems. So this is, I was really surprised, and I was really happy with how it turned out.
Amazing. Awesome. I mean, it's an important problem generally to maybe discuss or whatever, but I just kind of like wanted to share that, you know, it's the same problem, you know, everywhere else, and just kind of, it would be nice to know more about, you know, some solutions, some ways. I just wanted to highlight that you mentioned you felt pressured that you have to empower women, right? And I know some people, and it's fair, like it might be not fair, like why you have to solve this? Is it like you caused this problem, right? So sometimes it's sad that maybe women are asked to like fix this problem, like why you have to fix it. So there are many perspectives here and super hard, but glad that you, sounds like you took it positively and super productively, and thank you for your work. But you know, I don't think it was a fair ask as well, and fair pressure, no?
I mean, I say that it was a pressure because there are not many out there.
Okay, so yeah, it wasn't like everybody asked you. But yeah, like, it's an important topic. So it's just very difficult. And I'm also mentoring some women, and it just, yeah, like explaining different feelings behind, you know, male asking questions aggressively, it doesn't mean, you know, he hates you, right? So there are so many important things. So anyway, it's good that you started this. And I wonder, what's the result of it? Like, how many, you know, mentees and nice stories that you had from this?
So statistics say, so this is what triggered me. Statistics say that 50% of women get out of tech in their first years after starting tech. And there are two main reasons. One is that, you know, no support for childcare and things like this when they decide to become a mom. But I think the most important one is that the culture in the tech companies. And this is something that you can change, I think, by mentoring the managers. I think managers have such a big impact in companies and in the culture of the companies. Of course, it's important that you have the founder that is backing you up. But I think, you know, now, you know, it's nice that more and more companies are having this, are maybe, if you want, forcing their managers to do different tutorials, to take different tutorials to kind of be aware of these problems. And this is what I basically, I think we should change. And my goal is also, like, my motivation is my daughter. She's 10. And, you know, and it's, you know, and everyone around us, like, oh, a girl's good at math. They are not. They should go to learn languages and study languages. And it makes me so angry that still nowadays the percentage of girls in even school, so my daughter is going now in the fifth grade and she's going to one of these STEM schools, and there are only 10 out of 40, so one-third girls, which is a high percentage considered. And I think, you know, we have to start really low think, like, early in their career to start motivating them. So I think this is a problem in the society.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think having you know, people like you, women leaders in tech that are achieving a lot, so, you know, directors of Elastic or founders of startups, I think it definitely helps because people can see that you can do it, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, things are not so going so well with the Tupu. It's very hard nowadays to build a nonprofit organization because basically so far it's self-funded, so I have to put my own money in this.
Yep.
It's so easy nowadays to raise money for a for-profit company, but it's kind of impossible to raise any money for any nonprofit. So basically, I had someone that was taking over this, especially when I started to be very busy with SATA. But now she is, you know, she went back to have a full-time job, and we have to basically close it.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, I hope that, you know, more, yeah, there will be a way for nonprofits to help
yeah.
in the world.
You know, it's not probably the I don't know if this podcast is good to discuss all of this, but
yes.
Like, why not making it a profit? Like, why not trying to make a business out of it, not to earn, but to fund this great idea, right? Like, have you thought about, I don't know, like selling this? Like, literally big tech companies, they should pay for, you know, maybe some mentors or some mentoring guidance or consulting or any of those things. Like, is it a possibility or not really?
Yeah, I think it's hard.
Yeah, it will definitely.
Let's,
even if it's possible, it would involve like a lot of work, like a second startup.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, what happened with Zeta? How it was created? Zeta, sorry.
Yeah, so basically when we started Tupu, this mentorship platform, we were looking for a database solution to you know, to be able to you know, have a relational database that where we can store the mentors and mentees and the relations between them. Coming from Elastic's, we wanted to have a really good experience with full text search because I really don't like those applications or like websites where they have a very poor search experience. So for us, it was important is that we, for example, if you are a mentee and you want to search a mentor in a specific with specific keywords, then you get the right mentor back. We also want you to have the spreadsheet like UI, like Airtable has. So we are really in love with that. And, you know, normally you don't get this from other from traditional databases. So basically what we realize is that it's really hard even nowadays to have a database that makes it easy to use. And, you know, for us, we had to spend time in building the database platform, because if you need a search, you have to synchronize the data from Postgres, because we are using Postgres as a relational database, to Elasticsearch. And I know from Elastic, this was one of the biggest use cases that we had. And, you know, synchronizing the data from Postgres to Elasticsearch is not an easy task, because you need Kafka and kind of requires to have engineers that have experience in multiple, you know, data stores. And this is something that, in my opinion, you know, if you are searching online, you are seeing a lot of how to do this, but like why every company needs to reinvent the wheel and implement the same thing when we can offer an out-of-box experience that allows companies to put all their resources on building their core business, the application, instead of building the database platform. And this also ties with the vision that I have, is that I think companies will, in the future, like maybe 3 or 4 years from now, should be able to build a company with much less resources. And, you know, all this, especially with AI, I think we are going in that direction, right? That you don't need to hire a 100 people team in order to build really a big business around it. And then, you know, and then a database platform that also scales with your needs. It's not that, you know, most companies, they build a database platform initially, and then when they scale, they have, you know, they kind of find the bottleneck that they cannot scale further until, you know, they have to do a refactoring. And I think, you know, it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense for you as a company to justify adding resources to something that doesn't really bring you direct impact to the revenue of the company. So we started SATA with the idea to offer this, you know, out-of-box experience, kind of fully managed service. And we believe that you should use a data store that fits your own use case. I know that other companies think that Postgres is good for everything. You know, for observability, for like key value store, for this and that. And we have the opposite vision that we, you know, I think Postgres should be at the center of your database platform and should contain the truth of your data. And then you can use different data stores for different use cases that you have. And for now, we started with adding, I mean, we did this from the beginning. We started to add Elasticsearch just because half of the people from SATA are from Elastic. So I brought with me a lot of technical leads and leaders from Elastic to, you know, to work with me at SATA. Because of our extensive experience with Elasticsearch, like, we decided to go for this. But, you know, I think it's important that, you know, in the future, we plan to add more data stores. So this is kind of the vision. But then we also want to, what we do is kind of we get all the pain points that people have, or the most important pain points that people have with Postgres, and we are trying to come with an innovative solution to fix this. And, you know, for example, we can store files and attachments and images as a native data type in Postgres. We can, for example, we can store vectors. So we also have like a vector, you know, for we can store embeddings for a vector search use cases. We can also, for example, we have now a story of about schema migrations with zero downtime. It basically, companies don't have like a easy way how to do this, and we came with an innovative solution. And yeah, and this is just the beginning. We have so many plans to, you know, fix, you know, make it easier, if you want, for people to to work with, you know, and help them build applications on top of the database platform, but also help them scale as they grow.
Awesome. So in the beginning, the idea was to kind of solve your own problem, the problem that you had in Tupu. How did you validate that other people will have the same problem? Or did you just went straight to kind of building and, you know, when once you have something, you go and show it to people?
For me, what triggered is that, no, I did speak with a few companies. And for me, it's like when I've seen that technical companies are using Airtable to build their database platform, I said, and with a lot of hacks. Yeah. This is what we did at the beginning as well. So we used Airtable with a lot of hacks in order to build our database platform. And, you know, companies kind of, you know, you can do hacks for a while until you cannot do this anymore. And you have to find another solution, right? And basically a more proper solution. And this is what triggered me. And people are using Airtable because of the spreadsheet-like UI. You know, an easy way to manage data, an easy way to visualize the data, to interact with the data.
And now you have also open sourced a bunch of things. You mentioned the migration tool, like that's open sourced. Are you planning on like open sourcing more of the platform? Like how do you decide what to open source, what to not to open source?
That's a very good question. So the idea is that, so this is basically our open source strategy, is that we are open sourcing. So each of these open source projects that we have is basically solving a specific pain point that people have with Postgres, and it works against native Postgres. For us, it's very important that everything we do is native Postgres, and we are not, you know, maintaining a fork of Postgres and so on. And so this is how we decide. And with the idea, you know, that larger enterprises that can collaborate with us on open source project. And we want to basically use all these open source projects for as a base for the SATA service. And for now we have, we're gonna launch more soon. This is what I can say, but we have a PG role, like I said, for schema yep. migrations with zero downtime that has a huge success. People are so excited about this because we have a new way of doing this. So we are offering the new schema and the old schema in the same time. So you can also do the rollback if you decide that it's not the new schema, or the, like testing with the new schema is not appropriate or is not the right result. And in addition to that, we also started on a journey to build extensions on Zeek. So we have this PGZX, but more will come in the near future.
This is amazing. Sounds novel, but you have a mention of a serverless on the main website, and I wonder why? What's so special about serverless in your journey here in this company?
I think this is a very good question. What we mean by serverless is that it's fully managed, and we offer more out-of-the-box experience than any other database service out there, right? Because companies, you know, that are using the services from AWS, they have to glue them together. You know, it's like it's more work for your database team, but we are providing kind of an easy way, kind of an out-of-box experience, if you want. And this is what we mean. It's fully managed, so you don't have to do things. We handle things for you. And we also offer premium support for companies that don't have any expertise in databases and, you know, 24-hour support. We can also help them with deciding how to do any architecture decisions regardless, right, on their internally.
Makes sense. And I cannot stop myself of asking, is Zeek the next best backend language?
That's a very...
Because I hear more and more, but I never even tried yet, but it's people like it.
So we are working on a solution for scalability. So for us, it's important to have a story of scalability, and we are working on this distributed Postgres. And we kind of were thinking how to implement this, and as a first step, we build this, we build PGTX, and our distributed Postgres solution is built on top of PGTX. And why we decided Zig? So we went back and forth, right? Considering that Zig is not a mature language out there, but basically, you know, we had the option between Rust, C, and Zig, and for us it was, you know,
oh yeah, from those, definitely, yeah.
You can use Postgres as a library, and this is basically the advantage that you get when you are using C and Zig, and we decided to go for Zig because see, it felt like.
Why not Go? I guess it was not able to compile dynamically the library.
Yes, But everything we do is in Go, so we are a Go shop. And it's interesting that, you know, when I decided to build Packybit, so I was a C developer, and my goal, okay, let me start learning a new programming language, and I decided to do in Go. And everything, like, everything we did in the bits was Go. And now it's like, of course, we decided to Go because we had people that were very experienced in Go. So we are like, yeah. But nowadays, it's much easier to find Go developers than it was back then.
Yeah. Super interesting. I just want to like reference back something that you said about hiring, you know, people with high agency, you know, people that don't just do their task ABC, but they can come up with tasks. They're proactive in how they solve problems. How are you finding these people, and how do you judge during the interview process that somebody is this type of person? Because it's not only, you know, technical skill. You have to test for something else. How do you do this in Zeta right now?
I think this is a very good question, and I would say experience is. So I was lucky that I started to be responsible with hiring from the beginning of my career because, you know, I was in a team of male engineers, and of course it was me that was somehow ended up with taking care of hiring, and I think experience is really right now, for example, I can easily figure out from the CV if this is a person that we are looking for based on the projects that they did in the past, how interesting the projects were. And I kind of figure out from the first 15 minutes of the interview if this is a person that we want to go for or not. Sometimes it's hard. For example, one of the engineers that I was hiring at the beginning of my career, he had like one page, and even half a page was written. So, I mean, some engineers don't feel like they have to put everything on their CV, and that person was one of the best person we had. So I think it's, you have to make sure you are not missing out those. For me, it's important diversity, and this is what I spend most of my time in. Because now we have 40% female in the company, and I can tell you that all the female leaders that we have, they are leading projects internally. But it's hard to to find those and get those. So it's because you don't want to, you know, hire them just because they are diversity candidates, and because I have a very high bar for hiring, it makes it even more difficult. Also, we are a very technical company, so like what we are building is very, very challenging and very complicated. It's hard, right? So sometimes I really say that, you know, we have this position that is open. We are not going to fill it with anyone else except a female candidate. And yeah, I need to be persistent on that. Even sometimes we really need to fill that position. But you need to be very strict on this. Otherwise, you know, I had the problem in the past that I had the 10 people male And I was not able to hire any woman in the team, just because you, first question you get, how many females are in the team? And you are failing that question and you are like, you are not getting
like,
anyone.
Like the woman wouldn't be happy as well, like being alone, right? In the team. Yes. Yeah, so excellent, excellent advice. But I wanted to check about this high agency. You mentioned that in 15 minutes, you kind of know. Can you share like one thing that reveals that very quickly, that somebody really doesn't have this high agency and really needs help to, you know, like what to do next, right?
So you can kind of figure out by asking question, how did they handle projects in the previous company? And you can figure out if they were basically just another person in a team or if they had initiative. So initiatives is what, you know, it's a, by way, I think the only way how you can figure out, but also the type of projects, you know, there are some people that they just did very few projects that are very easy in a year. And there are some others that, you know, did amazing project, complicated projects in a year, right? So it's this is something that you can already figure out from the CV in some cases, if they put this information in the CV, but otherwise you have to interview and figure this out. So that's why I am the one that is doing the first interview. Now I'm doing the interview with my colleague that he's a manager. But yeah, I'm doing the interview kind of to, I'm trying to spare the time of engineers.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we kind of have to wrap up, but I really want to inject one more question around similar topic. So imagine you were not on the interview, unfortunately. So somebody else interviewed and made a mistake of hiring somebody that doesn't have high agency. Is there, you know, people improve sometimes, you know, surprisingly. Like, is there any advice you could give for somebody that has some a higher talented engineer, but maybe not with high agency skills, and how to trigger them, how to, you know, try to improve that any way, or there's no way?
I think, in my opinion, it needs to come, the motivation needs to come from the individual, right? If there is no motivation from the individual, I think it's hard. But I think it also depends on the type of company that you are building, right? For some companies, yeah, it's not so, you know, for most of the companies, they are not building something very complex, you know, and then I think it's easier to get better, right? Yeah. But I think mentoring and trying to support that person is, I think, the only way. But in my opinion, it can work only when the other is aware and willing. Yeah. To work harder and to take the extra mile.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, are we good for maybe last question? Actually, two questions. Yeah. So first question is, imagine, I mean, you are very successful and amazing story and like, yeah, good example of how to be a good leader, sounds like it. So nothing like super better you could do, I guess, in the journey. But we are just curious, like, imagine you were kind of like getting back in time and you were kind of just about to found this PacketBeat kind of project and company. It's like, what you wish you knew back then that would help you even more? Any advice you'd love to have back then?
I don't know if I will have changed anything going back to PacketBeat. I think you always feel like I'm not good enough for the job, but somehow I didn't have this problem. So I was like, okay, I need to do this. And, you know, sometimes my English was broken, not very good at the beginning. And then, I feel like you need to have a bit more self-confidence, which I think is hard for most of the people. And I don't think I am a very self-confident person, but somehow I was able to don't think about and, you know, try to motivate myself and to move forward faster. I think for me what's important is that I always This is the advice that I will give to others, younger generation, to really go and work for startups at the beginning of their career and learn and fail. And it's okay if you fail. This is the only way for you to learn. But just continue and always I chose to do things that I like. And I think, I don't know, I was not triggered by money, by titles, by anything. It's like, for me, it was important to
enjoy,
you know, to work on the things that that I like. And I think this came kind of randomly, so I didn't think that this was going to help me, but I think this is really an important thing. Because if you go to work and you are doing things that you don't like, is that you cannot really do a good job. And that's why I always say that the main role of a manager needs to make people happy, because if they are happy and if they are happy at the company, then they are going to do their best in building the product. But if they are not happy, it's just, you know, they are not happy and motivated, the results won't be there.
Yeah. Wow. So many advices, actually. Only one. Beautiful.
Awesome. And I have a final question. Monica, thank you so much for this insightful conversation. Where can people follow you? Where can people find out more about Zeta? And if they want to try it out, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah, so you can try it out at Zeta.io. We are offering a free generous tier because of our story with Tupu. You want to support other nonprofit organizations. And actually, our free generous tier is different than other companies, because you can also build real products in with it. So it's not like a trial. So we also offer HA with it. So the main reason is to support not only nonprofit organizations, but also startups at early stage when they're building an MVP on top of us. And then, you know, we can grow with them. And yeah, I'm available on LinkedIn and Twitter as well, so you can find me. And
awesome. And we're gonna add links to everything we talked about in the show notes, so if listeners you want to check them out, just look at the description of the podcast.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Monica. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Thank you so much. Thanks everybody for listening. We really appreciate the feedback you give us. Feel free to follow us on social media, YouTube, and your favorite podcasting platform. If you like this episode, or you have an improvement suggestion to our podcast, or maybe you want to hear something specific, let us know. Feel free to use the Google form on this podcast description, or reach us directly through social media. Thank you.
Thank you.